Welcome to After the Buzzer. We are back from hiatus at the world headquarters. Mike Gross and Gordy Jones are hanging, and it's football season. This is kind of, we're doing this on a Monday. It's kind of cool because in football season, because we can kind of rehash what just happened and sort of the rhythm of the weekly grind of football. So we're going to talk some Penn State later. We're going to talk some Eagles and NFL now with the recently retired one, Les Bowen, ex of the Philadelphia Daily News, and currently part-time for AP, and his crowning achievement, in my view, this is his third appearance on this show.
I think that comes, that comes with like a mug, I believe, a coffee mug or something like that.
You'll get something. Well, get ready for an Amazon delivery. Anyway, Les, welcome. Great to hear from you. And I have a... I watched game one of the Eagles, and I thought, you know what? Maybe Atlanta's the worst team in the league, but the Eagles at least look precise and sharp and ready to play, and like they have a game plan and all of that, and less so on Sunday, which I guess has to do with the opposition. So I guess in that context, tell me how you saw the first couple games.
Yeah, that's exactly how I saw it, Mike. You know, the 49ers were favored on the road Sunday, and, and that's not just by happenstance, but I think the infuriating thing for Eagles fans was that most of the first half, the Eagles looked like the better team, substantially the better team. That might have been a little bit of an illusion, but, you know, they certainly had an opportunity for whatever reason, because the 49ers weren't sharp or, you know, Garoppolo did miss some passes, but they could have scored like 17 points, you know, in the first half, and it would have been a very different game. Two things really concerned me. One was, I really thought the Eagles' defensive line would have a good matchup with the 49ers' offensive line. I didn't think the Eagles' defensive line had a great game, and most importantly, the prime member of that unit, the leader, the heart and soul of the team almost, Brandon Graham, is gone for the season now, and that's a huge deal, and I think that will resound, you know, much more than a lot of the other stuff, you know, the fourth down play and all that stuff, you know, that'll, you can work those things out, but you can't work out, you know, losing your... I don't know if many of the listeners followed the Ted Lasso show, but I likened Brandon today to the Roy Kent of the Eagles. You know, he's that kind of personality, that kind of person. So, you know, that was a huge deal. The other thing that I saw, and I was very surprised by, was the inability of the passing game to get into gear. Everybody knows the 49ers have a great front sub. But it wasn't like they had 20 sacks or anything like that. You know, I thought that despite losing another really good Brandon Brooks in early in the game, I thought that the pass blocking held up reasonably well, and the run blocking was good. But for some reason, either the receivers couldn't get open against a secondary that was missing its best player, Jason Verrett, or Jalen Hurts just couldn't find them. You know, so that was those are two very concerning things to me. And, you know, irrespective of the fact that the 49ers were favored and you know, probably do have more talent at this point, it just, those were things that I was expecting. You know, some people were, when I made those points on Twitter, people were saying, well, yeah, what about the linebackers? The linebackers were terrible. Well, we know what the Eagles have at linebacker. You know, that wasn't a shock that Fred Warner is better than the Eagles linebackers. That's one of the things you factor in going in, you know.
Yeah, right.
But the things that I just mentioned were things that I thought the Eagles could take advantage of, and it kind of went the other way on me.
Yeah, I agree. I thought they'd be able to throw it down the field some, and I thought if they're going to do anything offensively, they would have to. That surprised me a little bit, and I hope that isn't an indictment of Hurts.
Yeah, and without, you know, on the TV view, you can't really see what's going on out there. You know, I have no idea if receivers were open or if this secondary just really stepped up despite the loss of Barrett and played outstanding. I know Josh Norman is 150 years old and wasn't on anybody's team until a few weeks ago. You know, and there's another guy that's a rookie out there, so I don't know. But, and he wasn't like a first-round rookie either. But, you know, that definitely was a big surprise to me. And the Brandon Graham thing was compounded, in my view, by, okay, who's got to step up if Brandon Graham goes down? The first guy you think of is Derek Barnett.
Right.
But what does Derek Barnett do? He takes the eighth personal foul penalty of his career.
Wow.
And it's like all the others.
Wow.
It's a late hit that was totally superfluous to the play.
Huh.
It could have set up the Eagles. It could have stopped basically a 49ers drive that ended in a field goal, I believe. Instead, it gave them a first down because he had to hit a guy who wasn't looking at him on the sideline after the ball had gone out of bounds. And Derek Barnett did nothing in terms of pressure, sacks, that sort of thing. And B, he took an egregious penalty. And that really, you know, that bothered me quite a bit.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned throwing the ball down the field. The one exception, the one most notable exception, that was the 91-yarder from Hurts to Quez Watkins in the second quarter, which kind of led to a big turning point. They had first and goal at the one and ultimately did not score, with the fourth down play being the reverse would-be pass by Greg Ward. I wonder what Mike Sielski today kind of took Sirianni to task for his play calling down there, kind of saying he outsmarted himself. And to Sirianni's credit, he did kind of fall on his sword a bit. What was your take on that whole sequence?
Well, yeah, that definitely was the turning point of the game, Gordy. Not only did the Eagles not score any points, but the 49ers drove 97 yards and scored a touchdown. So that's a two-touchdown turnaround there. You know, and in a 17-11 game, that's that's the game. But, you know, Sirianni did blame himself for his play calling down there, and I think rightly so. Mike's column was very good. He made some excellent points.
I thought
he used the word arrogant, which I would shy away from that. I didn't see arrogance there.
Inexperience probably was the more telling thing.
I saw a guy who, okay, you're down in the red zone. We're in the red zone. You know, the field is very compact.
Yeah.
You have a team with a great front seven that you're facing. So what he did was he got too cute. He thought, okay, we're not going to win one-on-one matchups here. I have to do something odd or different to, you know, to finesse this ball into the end zone. I'm not sure that's really the case against anybody with that, with the offensive line that the Eagles have, especially from the one-yard line. I think maybe you just, you know, it might not be pretty. It might take two or three cracks, but you just keep leaning Jalen Hurts into that pile, and eventually you score. I don't, you know, trying the Philly special play, I'm not going to kill him for that. It's not like because they did it in the Super Bowl 3.5 years ago, everybody's now looking for that as a different coach, different team. I don't think anybody was looking for it. I think Fred Warner's just really smart, and
he went with
Jalen Hurts when Jalen Hurts slipped out, you know, into the end zone. But I do think it was too cute. I don't think it was arrogant. I just think he needed to man up a little bit and not be afraid of taking on that front seven of the 49ers in that situation. You know, and I think he learned from that. He talked about that today. I think he knows better now than to do something like that. The first down play, you know, Hurts kind of missed Zach Ertz there. I mean, that, you know, right there, there's a touchdown, you know. You don't have to go to fourth down if you score there.
Right.
You know, but that whole, you know, not scoring any points there was just a killer. And I had a big back and forth on Twitter today with my buddy Paul Donowich about I'm pretty sure from watching this a few times that if Greg Ward, when Hurts was covered, if Greg Ward had just tucked the ball under his arm and tried it into the end zone, I think that would have gone pretty well. There were 49ers who could have gotten there, but there were also Eagles blockers in front of him. And it certainly would have been better than throwing the ball out of the end zone on fourth down. Why in God's name would you ever do that? You know, I'd love to talk to Greg Ward and see what he thought. You know, maybe he wasn't throwing it out of. Maybe he thought he could somehow, you know, maybe he just missed the throw. But there is no reason to throw the ball out of the end zone on fourth down from the 3 yard line. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. There's nothing to be gained by that. But I don't know where he would have scored or not, but I think he would have had a good shot, and the game would have been totally different.
You know, speaking of Paul Domowicz, he also tweeted out today that Jalen was 2 for 7 on throws over 20 yards and 3 for 11 on throws over 11 yards, which is a really good Domo kind of stat. But I don't know if that is any indication of him or the defense or what we should look for long term. Maybe that's another case of an experience. What might be your take on that?
Yeah, that's alarming. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's an alarming stat. I get a lot of blowback. The Eagles fandom broke down in factions when Hurts versus Wentz, and I was by some people perceived to be a Wentz apologist just because I wouldn't blame him for everything bad that ever happened.
Damn you, Les, come on now.
So when I criticize Hurts, I get all kinds of how do you know this, they had 3 points with 5 minutes left in the game. He didn't play great. I'm sorry. That's whoever the quarterback is.
Yeah.
If the quarterback was Tom Brady and they had 3 points with 5 minutes left in the game, he would not have played great, I can't tell you. It looked like to me receivers weren't getting separation very much, which is very concerning, given that this group is supposed to be a great upgrade. Rager is supposed to have finally figured it out, and Watkins is supposed to be uncatchable, and Devontae Smith is, the 10th player taken in the draft, and I love Devontae Smith.
Yeah, I do too. I think he's going to be very good. Yeah.
He was targeted 7 times and caught 2 passes. Whose fault is that? I don't know. By the end of the season, I think we'll know, but right now, I don't. I just don't. I don't want to be a hot take guy. but that's just that's alarming.
That's so incompatible
word,
with that's
alarming.
That's so incompatible with Twitter. hot take thing. Tell us a little bit, Les, about your impressions of the new coach. He was generally thought to have bombed his first press conference, and since then. I've heard some guys from the gang, our colleagues down there, say they can't believe how impressed they are with how honest he is and et cetera. So give us a little sense, because you are still in there a little bit of the new coach.
Well, I'll say this. I think Nick Sirianni is a good person. When I announced my retirement, he actually texted me to say I'm really sorry. I was hoping we'd get to work together, and I was looking forward to it, and blah blah blah. It's not all about me, but that indicates something to me.
I agree.
He's a good person, and I think the Eagles coaches I have covered are Andy Reid, Chip Kelly, and Doug Peterson. Nick Sirianni, by far and away, is much more willing to try to explain things and be honest about his thoughts and his outlook. I just find all that really important. Now, whether he's ready to be an NFL head coach, we still don't know. He's very inexperienced. My biggest problem with this whole deal, when the coaching staff was announced, is there's a lot of guys here, including coordinators, who 10 years ago were fetching coffee for people. You know, I mean, I'm old, I know, but these are really, really young people in terms of the NFL, you know? Since then, I've kind of, I don't think that's the end of the world. I think these are smart people, but there are going to be some growing pains, and I think we saw that yesterday. But I'm not down on Nick Sirianni, really. I'm not a hater or anything like that. I want to see him succeed because I think he's a good person and a sincere person, and, you know, we need more of that in sports.
That is a good idea.
But he did make some mistakes yesterday. He was outcoached by Kyle Shanahan. I think that's going to happen to some other people this season. You know, I don't think that's, you know, let's fire him and move on. But I do think he has to learn from this. And he talked about that today, and I was impressed by some of the things he said today. One thing, you know, Jamie Apodi from Channel 6 asked about the 24-hour and moving on from a loss. And he could have given a very glib, you know, surface answer like, yeah, we're on to Dallas or something. But what he said was, no, you know, that's a, since that's a Monday night game next week, we haven't had a chance to go over this game yet with the players. We're going to do that tomorrow. And we're not on to Dallas. You know, you don't move on until you've corrected the mistakes. And that, I love to hear that.
Yeah,
you know,
that's great.
It wasn't like, oh, yeah, let's move on. You know, we've got another game. Yeah, it was more, no, we need to talk about this before we move on. We're not moving on until we've gone over this and, you know, made sure people understand what they did wrong. And, you know, again, that's a good sign. That's a real good sign of who this guy is.
That is impressive. That is unusual too, because you know, you get so many slogans from coaches. It's nice to nice to hear something.
It would have been so easy for him to say, "Oh, we're on to Dallas."
Right.
You know, we're not on to Dallas until we get this fixed.
A TV person was probably expecting him to say that.
Yes.
I mean, that sounds a little snarky. It's more snarky than I mean.
Not to denigrate JBL, but I'm sure that the way she phrased the question about the 24-hour rule, you know, where you dwell on a loss for 24 hours and you move on, she was expecting that. And I think we were all kind of expecting that. He said, you know, no, it's a Monday night game next week. There's no 24-hour rule. We didn't get the players today. Yeah. We'll have them tomorrow. And then after that, we'll move on.
There you go.
Now, you mentioned Brandon Graham before. It's interesting to me because I remember him being a good guy from the get-go. Like, I remember him shaking hands with reporters at training camp his first year.
That was his thing when he was drafted. When his first press conference, when he was drafted, he shook everybody's hand and declared that he would do that all season. And he did. Until some of us kind of said, okay, enough. You know, we're going to end of the day. Jesus Christ, you know.
But the other part
he had a terrible time. You know, if you remember, they drafted him instead of Earl Thomas.
Or JPP, and also. JPP was the one that got mentioned a lot then, too. But, Earl Thomas.
And then they did Washburn, the defensive line coach, didn't want to play him.
Yeah.
He had Jason Babin, who was his guy, you know.
Wow.
Jason Babin, the guy who taught me that sacks can be meaningless.
Yeah.
You can have 15 sacks and, you know, have no effect on the game whatsoever if every other play, somebody is running right past you,
right?
You know, because you don't get a sack for that. You know, it's So it took Brandon. Brandon had a serious knee injury, microfracture surgery, which was a very big deal in 2010, and still is kind of. It took him several years to really get established as a full-time starter, But when he did, and when he saved the Super Bowl for the Eagles,
right,
he became, like I said, the Roy Kent of this team. He's the heart and soul of this team. He's the guy that everybody knows is, you know, whatever Brandon does is the right thing to do, you know? That's a gigantic loss.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I'm sure you've seen the movie Almost Famous and the line from Lester Bangs where you'll meet them all on your long journey to the middle. That's sort of what's happened with him and JPP. They started out, JPP looked like a far superior player, and now they're pretty much, you know, even.
I would take Brandon's career. You know, I mean, JPP physically is bigger and stronger.
Right.
But he's had his ups and downs with blowing half of his stand off and stuff like that. You know, Brandon has been a bellwether for this team. You know, he is the guy that people look to on this team for guidance. And, you know, like I said before, what should I do? How should I react to this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's the guy they look at on offense and defense. I think he is they named a whole bunch of captains, but he is the captain of this team. Mm-hmm. And that's just a gigantic loss. I know he can still be around the locker room.
Right,
but it's not the same thing if you're not really playing, you know.
Especially in the NFL.
This
talking about this reminded me, Les, of watching the Bears play the other night and seeing Jason Peters starting for the Bears after we all thought. I thought his time in Philadelphia had come to an end, and I know that he was one of your. Favorites is the right word, but a guy that you certainly appreciated his greatness. What do you think about it now with a little distance from this idea that he had to be out of here when now he's starting, or at least he was. I think he got hurt again, but for a team that might be as good as the Eagles. You know what I mean? What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think they are as good as the Eagles, and that doesn't concern me at all. I think Jordan Mailata, it's time for him to play, you know. He's a great young talent, and I think he played pretty well yesterday, really.
Okay.
In fact, that was another thing I had a big dispute with Paul
Donovan
today about. Pro Football Focus claimed that Jordan Mailata was like the highest graded player on the field and gave up no pressures and no sacks. Well, some fan pointed out, you know, a video clip of Jordan Mailata giving up a sack to Nick Bosa.
Right.
And Damo's point, and I guess Pro Football Focus's point, is that the middle of the line collapsed and Jalen Hurts was kind of trapped there.
Right.
And Bosa just kind of reached over Mailata and sacked him. So it wasn't really Mailata's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Pro Football Focus keeps their own stats.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't credit Jordan Mailata with having given up a sack there. But my view is the National Football League gave Bosa a sack. So, and Jordan Mailata was the guy blocking Bosa. So Jordan Mailata gave up a sack. I'm sorry. You know, I mean, that's just not... No, that's not legit, you know, to say that he did. But he played well.
Yeah,
I don't.
He did.
You know,
seem
they don't
like
need
well.
Jordan. You know, Jason Peters is 150 years old now, really, he should have retired a couple of years ago. I think if Jason had been healthy for the Super Bowl, I think he would have retired after that.
Mm.
But he wasn't. And he desperately wanted to get back to that. Mm-hmm. And he chased that for 3 years here. And now he's chasing it in Chicago, and he's not going to get there with Chicago. But, you know, he's made a lot of money. He's, I think, a Hall of Fame player.
No doubt. Yeah. No doubt.
I really think he should hang it up. I mean, he can't play, you know, 40 downs without getting hurt now.
Yeah.
That's just... That's what happens. I mean, it's not so much that you lose your talent in any sport. It's that you can't play without getting hurt.
Yeah.
And that, you have no value, you know, if that's the case.
Can't make the club in the tub.
That's the case with him. I think he actually played yesterday for the Bears, but he left the opener with a quadriceps or hamstring injury, and he was, you know, didn't practice all week, and I think he lumbered out there for the Bears yesterday, and I don't know, maybe he played well. I didn't see their game. Mm-hmm. They won.
Yeah.
But I just can't imagine. He must not want, he must be really afraid of life after football, is mm-hmm. all I can figure.
Yeah, that's probably right.
It's
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of life after, let's talk a little bit about Gordy and I are headed in the same direction that you're already in here, which is retirement yeah. or quasi-retirement. How do you find it? How do you? I feel like I'm on some level going to miss this when I'm not doing it anymore. But
but there
are other things that will compensate, I think. How are you finding it?
You know, I have not been bored yet. I've had a lot going on. My mom's 95 and she lives in Charlotte, and I've been down there a bunch of times. She's not doing great, so that's been something that I've been able to apply more personal attention to than I would be if I were working
sure.
full time.
Yeah.
Also, I had a son, my younger son, Dan, finished up graduate school at LSU and got a job at UMBC, the Maryland Baltimore County.
Wow, right. Yeah.
And so I ended up driving a 26-foot U-Haul truck from Baton Rouge to Baltimore, and that was as hard as any work I've ever done.
Yeah, really.
And lived to tell about it.
You know, so I've had things, and plus I'm doing this thing for AP once a week about the Eagles,
That's nice.
I've done two freelance stories that kind of jumped into my lap, you know, without me seeking them. So far, it doesn't really feel like retirement per se. It only feels like retirement on game day mm-hmm. when I don't have anything to write, you know.
Yeah.
And I would love to have a little something to write on game day. Maybe I'll figure that out eventually. But,
yeah, that could happen.
You know, it's I'm leaving Wednesday to go see my other son, Matt, in Denver. He's been there 2 years, and I haven't been out there, and my wife and I are going, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. I don't have to worry about the Eagles or, you know, whether they sign somebody or, you know, anything like that. It's liberating. It really is.
That's nice.
I'm 65. I have a stent. You know, I'm not, you know, I want to have a good 10 or 15 years, I hope, to travel and hike and do things. My dad didn't really have that. You know, I'm really lucky through no fault of my own. I have the financial resources that I'm not, you know, desperate there.
Mm-hmm.
I feel good about it. My thinking was that I would work this year. I was hoping this year would be like a normal year with the locker room
yeah,
and everything.
Right. Yeah.
And then I could maybe, when I turn 66 next year, I, you know, be ready for Social Security, and that would be a good time to sort of bow out. But the company came up with a buyout offer and a new boss that didn't know me at all.
Right.
And, you know, it just seemed like, okay, maybe this is better. And I'm still very new to it. Mm-hmm. I might feel differently in a year, but I hope I don't.
Mm-hmm.
Now I feel really good about it. I don't feel like I've made any huge mistake or that I'm, you know, just waiting around to die or anything like that. I'm getting to run more, Gordy. Gordy used to be, I don't know if Gordy still runs,
yes.
but he was a hell of a runner back
yes.
when
still
we were
do.
Going to camp at Lehigh.
Still do.
Okay. Yeah, I can, one thing the pandemic, I had stopped at age 60 because my knees started hurting.
Right.
But one thing the pandemic taught me, when the gym closed, I strapped on some knee braces, and I can toddle around like an old man, you know, 13-minute miles or something like that,
Bam.
You know, but I can do it, and, you know, I am an old man. I mean, I used to worry about looking like an old man out there, you know, on the street. But now that I am one, it's like, okay, I look like an old man. I am an old man. You know, I have more time for that. In fact, I ran yesterday right before kickoff.
Such a beautiful day to run, too.
And instead of, you know, trying to file notes and having my blood pressure, escalate while I'm trying to get ready for a game, I went for a nice 3.25 mile run, and you know, I liked it. That's great. Enjoyed it.
So is this classified, or are you allowed to say what those two freelance pieces were that you did?
Oh no, one was really weird. This PR company emailed me out of the blue. They do a magazine for AAA, the automotive. And they were interested in this story about Eagles fans traveling to away games.
Wow, that's great.
Which frankly would have been a good Inquirer story if I'd ever thought to write it.
Yeah.
But I never did. And I thought, yeah, I could probably do that. But I was kind of like, yeah, I'm retiring. I don't know. And they said, well, we're thinking $750 for 750 words.
I like
that.
And
I said, do you need that today?
Exactly.
There you go.
And what was the other one?
So, and that is still, you know, people are still reading that. Where, you know, it's out there in the, I don't understand. I do understand social media, but somehow they put that on Facebook in a thing beyond my little Facebook page. And every day there's more comments on that story, you know. God knows how many people have read it by now, but yeah, it was fun to do.
That's great.
And the other one was Rob Motti from AP moved to Florida, and he was supposed to do a story for South Jersey Magazine.
Oh, right.
And it was originally going to be on Devontae Smith.
Right.
But there was no way to get Devontae to, you know, before the season, get him, you know, for a one-on-one or anything. And we ended up doing a Jalen Hurts story, and it was not the best thing I've ever written, but I think it was pretty good, and they liked it, and maybe I'll do something more for them, you know, as time goes by. I live in South Jersey. They're South Jersey Magazine, you know. It seems okay to me. I didn't really seek out this kind of stuff when I worked at the Inquirer because I had plenty of work to do, doing freelance, but, now that I have time, I'm willing to jot down a few things if they want. This AP thing, you know, I'm willing to do more if they want more. But I don't want to work. I have a friend who was in banking, and he got a job. His job was to negotiate from the bank's point of view with, like, developers over loans and stuff. And he retired. And then one of the developers called him and said, hey, would you be interested in working part-time on the other end on telling us what we need to do to satisfy the bank before we go to them, you know, make sure we're prepared for this, you know, that we have dotted all of our I's and crossed our T's. So he said, sure. He did that for a while, but then he told me just a few months ago that he quit, that he looked up one day and he was working as much there as he had at the bank. And it was like, this wasn't what I had in mind for retirement.
Right.
So I'm not looking for that. You know, I don't need a full-time job in retirement. But I do like, you know, just kind of, you know, not writing anything ever would be very odd for me after
Me too.
More than 45 years of doing this.
Agreed.
You know,
I absolutely agree with that.
I was so, it's funny you mentioned the Eagles fans traveling, because when I was watching the Atlanta game, when they got a big lead toward the end of the Atlanta game, I sort of sat down and started working myself, and the TV is, I can't see the TV, but it's on and I can kind of hear it, and I hear the fans going nuts.
Yes.
And I'm thinking, what is Atlanta making a run here? Are they making a game of this? I like three times I did this. I walked out to the TV and it's the Eagles fans going nuts in Atlanta. How unusual is that with the Eagles?
It's very common, and I'm ashamed that I never did this story for the Inquirer or the Daily News. Gordy remembers back from the days when he used to travel. It's extraordinary. I mean, you have to make sure when the Eagles schedule comes out, you book your flights.
Oh, yeah.
Because fans will fill up the flights.
Yeah.
There are people. It's not just like one game, like, okay, maybe I want to go to San Francisco or something. There are people who go to every away game.
Wow. That's crazy.
And spend thousands and thousands of dollars. Yeah. This is how they spend their, you know, their disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
There are very few teams in the NFL that have that kind of, you know, I guess the Cowboys
and
a few other teams, but it's anywhere you go with the Eagles, there are Eagles fans. And mm-hmm. I got used to, you know, walking down the street in Kansas City on Saturday night, having people recognize me, not because I'm world famous, but because they're Eagles fans who are in Kansas City for the game. You know? it's a hell of a thing. It really is. And I was able to talk to several of them about how they strategize and what they do. There's a lot of younger guys who like go together on an Airbnb. There's like 10 of them in an Airbnb or something, right. You know, stuff like that.
Oh, that poor Airbnb owner.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Oh, that's a burden.
That's the other thing. Eagles fans have a bit of a reputation. I've been on flights where the flight attendants threatened to cut off liquor service and things like that. You know, it's a heck of a. It's almost like European soccer.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's a very good comparison.
Where people travel and maybe are not the most urbane travelers in some cases, but usually it's great. Usually they're wonderful people, and you know you're happy to meet them and. You're in the hotel, and everywhere you walk in this whatever city you're in, you're seeing, you know, Eagles jerseys, and it's a real phenomenon.
I had one of those one time. I think we were flying to Dallas, and I was on a flight with a bunch of those fans, and they were carrying on like asking the flight attendant if she wanted to join the Mile High Club and such. So eventually I just took out my laptop and just started typing the things they were saying. So I wrote that column, and somebody completely misunderstood what I was getting at and said, oh, well, don't glorify them. Well, that's not exactly what I was trying to do there, big fella.
Yeah.
I was impressed, Les, that you dug down for a couple seconds there and came up with urbane. That was good.
Yeah.
All right, Les, man.
It's quite a thing. It's really Eagles fans on the road. They're often amazed by the fact that people in other cities like Kansas City or Green Bay were like, hi, oh, you're here for the game. Oh,
yes.
As they're walking through the parking lot, you know, come over and have a hot dog, you know. Because Eagles fans aren't known for acting that way when other fans come to the link. and that is an option. You can be nice to people even though they support the other team.
That's
you know,
crazy
it's not
talk.
Gonna make any, you know, parts drop off. you know, like Nicki Minaj's cousin or whatever.
Oh. Now we're reeling. We're reeling just a little.
But you're right. It's like they want to be tough until somebody calls them on that, and then they don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Then they say, well, what about the New York fans? Well, no, wear it. If you're going to be tough, you know, wear it.
Wear it, baby.
Just own it.
But my thing is they like it when fans in, you know, Arizona, like, are real nice to them. They're like, oh, these people were so nice. Well, how about, you know, I mean...
It's an option.
It is an option.
Look into it.
Yes.
All right, Les. We love you. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Les.
Appreciate hearing from you.
It's great talking to you guys. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you, and safe trip out to Denver, too.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, take care. Be well.
Have fun, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, Mike, Les Bowen, a three-time appearer on... we should give him something after that.
Yeah, and each one, I think, has been better than the previous one. Or maybe not, but they've all been good. That's for sure.
Well, it just speaks to the kind of gentleman he is.
Yeah.
And I mean that in every sense of the word.
Yeah, he really is. And it's funny because you're probably going to be able to retire and still work. And that's one of the things that is sort of foremost on my mind is making that kind of work and do stuff that I really want to do. Because right now, being a sports writer, you're doing too many things
too
that
many
you
things.
Don't really want to do. Right. Not all, certainly not all, and we'll get to that. We'll get to some of those. But, yeah, so I'm glad that it's working out for him so well. And he is a really good observer of...
Oh, God, yes. Always has been. Always has
whatever
been.
He's covering, whatever yeah. he's writes about.
Yeah, he's really got an eye and a knack and, you know, the persistence and the stamina to do all that. And God love him for that.
I know I think we talked about this one of the times when Les was on, but with our Penn State coverage at LNP, I said for a while I was doing a column and a game story, and then for a while I was just doing a column, and we were trying to figure, you know, it kind of went back and forth, and then a few years ago, I said to my editors, you know, I'd like to do sort of a game story
right.
that's with some column elements in it and some hopefully some humor and sort of covering a wide range of, because a football game is an event with a lot of moving parts, and you know, the game story is sort of real straight and I'm picking sort of one thing for a column and there's a lot of stuff that's getting missed there. So anyway, I told them, check out what Les does yes. in the Philadelphia Daily News, where he does this kind of big sprawling
yeah.
sort of funny sort of columnish game story.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the role model for what I try to.
Yeah, do. And it's a good one to follow for sure, because it is not easy to do. It is not easy to tie everything together.
Oh, and yeah, that's the thing. You forget things. I mean, there's so many things going on. Yeah.
Yes, but to your point about continuing to do what you do after you retire, I think. If in my heart of hearts, like having gone over into another kind of writing now, I definitely appreciate what I used to do and yeah. just how much I enjoyed that. And I look forward to getting back to that after I retire from
yes.
this.
You'll be able to.
And that's the point. I mean, I sort of dabble in it right now, but I don't have really the time or the energy to really
yeah,
get
right.
it what it deserves.
And energy, because let's be honest, energy, that's one thing about getting older. Energy becomes more and more of an issue.
Yeah,
I sort of have to marshal my resources
absolutely.
to not. I know there's only so much tedium and so that I'm going to be able to put up with, and I sort of have to pace myself in terms of just my energy level.
So yeah, and well, speaking of that, you had a game on Saturday night against Penn State against Auburn, where you returned home at 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
and there were speaking of a lot of elements, there were certainly a ton of elements in there. So what did we? I mean, Sean Clifford had a great game. Their defense, again, came up big in the red zone twice at the end of the game, as they did against Wisconsin. So there were a lot of things going on there that I think would bode well for them, I would think, in the long run.
Yeah, and honestly, there aren't many teams in the country that have two better wins than they have right
That's
now.
Very true.
I mean, you know, they're up to number six now in the AP and the coaches poll, which might be a little high, I think, but logically, I mean, you can defend it.
Yeah, I mean, who's played a better schedule?
Yeah,
to this
yeah,
point,
right? And I think maybe the going forward takeaway, other than just the fact that they won, because you know you lose and you only play 12 games, and I really feel like at the beginning of the season we talked about this Sean Clifford marriage with Mike Yurcich, the new coordinator, and I really think you saw some reason to be optimistic about that if you're a Penn State fan on Saturday night. I've always felt like people say, well, Clifford holds on to the ball too long. I almost think the reason it's almost like he's impatient. He holds on to it long because of his impatience.
Yeah.
He kind of, there's this little instance where as a quarterback where you have to think, well, that window is going to be open there. I'm going to hold on to it for an extra second.
Interesting.
Which means I'm going to get smacked in the mouth to make the throw because it's third and six, and otherwise we're going to have to punt. You know what I mean? Well, by the time a great quarterback is making that calculation, Clifford in the past, I think, has already given up on it and scrambled it around.
That's
so he's holding on to the ball because he's impatient. Is the way I see it.
Okay, that's
so. Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, I feel like I'm sure I'm totally and this is unbelievably. It's unbelievably hard to do, play quarterback. I think it's unbelievably hard to do. I don't think I can do it certainly, but I feel like he's making progress in that area.
Yeah,
where and I think Yurcich is coaching him hard, and that's got something to do with it. The other thing is they got some receivers, man.
I was just going to mention that you invoked the names of Allen Robinson and Chris Godwin in relation to Jahan Dotson. I think that's right on the money. I mean, he is really, and I'm trying to remember the guy that was supposed to be the guy, the receiver in that class, the big guy who ended up transferring.
Oh, Juwan Johnson.
No, not Juwan Johnson. Oh. The recruit. He was a big, muscular guy who ended up transferring.
He never went to Penn State, or he never.
He did, but he didn't really make a huge impact. I mean, but.
I know. The guy from New Jersey. Yeah. Where did he went to Florida.
Yeah.
He transferred to Florida.
Yes.
Antonio Shelton also transferred to Florida. Right. I don't know if there's a connection there or what, but I can't think of that guy's name either. Shorter?
Justin Shorter.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was supposed to be the guy in that class, and Dotson obviously is the guy. Yeah. Really talented, acrobatic guy. I would say he's a little more like Robinson than he is Godwin, but, I mean, they're all in the same, you know.
And physically, he's more like maybe Bobby Ingram.
Yeah, he's not a big guy.
He's not a big guy.
But he's very athletic, and he makes all the catches, and he runs all the routes, and he's certainly an NFL player.
He's dialed in. You can just tell he's just one of those guys that came for a fight and is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the Parker Washington is headed in the same direction. He may be more limited physically because he's really sort of a – He's a sort of a short guy. And Lambert Smith, I think, is coming, too. Plus, they finally fired the tight end weapon.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, finally is right.
Yeah, which those guys are good football players. They can block.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they direct snapped it to a tight end, and then he ran for a touchdown, and then they tried to do it again.
That didn't work so well the second time.
That's one thing about Franklin, you know. Everybody in the world thinks that, like, this is the most obvious thing in the world. Well, yeah, that's what we're doing. We're doing the most obvious thing in the world, like he used to do with Wildcat, or he used to do with Levis, the quarterback.
Yeah.
Yes. When he came in, you knew he was going to run the ball, and we're not going to try to fool you. He's going to run the ball, and there's a little, I don't know, that's weird, but the start that they've gotten off to, I think they still have some tough games.
Sure.
Michigan has played really well. Michigan State has played really well. Even Maryland and Rutgers are 3-0 and have showed some good things.
That's crazy.
And Ohio State is going to get better. Ohio State is legitimately struggling right now.
Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
Because that hasn't happened. And when's the last time that happened?
Yeah. I did the old market report, and I did. One of the things that the value going up was the Big Ten East, except for Ohio State, picking up a little bit.
Yeah, they're really holding everybody back, obviously. Yeah. So, but okay, there was obviously, and for good reason, a lot of focus on the officiating in Saturday's game where they somehow messed up. The down, what down it was, and Penn State ended up punting on what should have been third down, but the officials insisted it was fourth down. And the other one was the spot on P.J. Mustipher's fake punt, where I thought that he got it easily, and they said no.
Mm.
But and you also mentioned some intentional groundings and also a targeting on one of Auburn's better defensive players that kind of went a little sideways. But at any rate, it was an SEC crew doing an intersectional game, and that is not unusual for that to happen that way.
Yeah, when you play an SEC team on the road, when they're on the road, mm-hmm. it's usually an SEC crew. Next year, Penn State goes to Auburn, it'll probably be a Big Ten crew.
Right.
And the SEC acknowledged the mistake on the taking a down away
from
Penn State. They issued a statement and admitting it. And the weird thing about that is, normally, I would think you would make the mistake in the opposite way, forgetting that intentional grounding is a loss of down and give them an extra down.
Right.
You know, that would be the more natural sort of mental slip up, you know.
That's true. That's a good point. But, you know, math is hard.
Math can be hard. And it was funny because it sort of like kind of gradually dawned on everybody in the press box. Did they miss it down there? And then, you know, they had the live stats, so you could go back and look. And you could look and see, no question. And I actually took a picture of it with my phone and tweeted it because, yes, there's no doubt. And then I asked Franklin about it after the game, and I said, the way I phrased it was, it appeared like they took a down from you.
Yeah.
And he went, appeared? And then I said, well, I'm trying to sound diplomatic. And he goes, you don't have to sound diplomatic. I have to be diplomatic. And I said, okay, they took a down away from you. And he said he tried to talk to him, and they even somehow consulted the replay booth.
How does everybody miss it?
It's unbelievable.
Whoever the referee guy was for the broadcast, he said that all eight officials keep the downs themselves. How do all eight miss it? That just is unfathomable to me.
It's kind of like the ESPN having the high school game with a team that didn't exist.
Bishop Sycamore, yeah.
How can this happen?
How can this, in 2021, how does this happen?
Mama, I don't know. I just don't know.
But at any rate, I think we can say that they have a good team. Their defense is,
their defense is good. Yeah.
I compare it to, in 85 and 86, they went 23-1. Obviously, the last of those games was the memorable game against Miami. You know, red zone defense was enormous. Yeah. Obviously enormous in that game. Pete Gutopoulos with the interception of Testaverde. But they had a lot of games like that in that 2-year stretch where they were backed up in their own end at the end of the game, and they invariably made a play. And that's how it feels now.
And the back end of their defense, I think, is the biggest strength of their whole team. And it's not only it's depth. It's their athletic, but also guys with really good instincts and really good ball skills.
Jaquan Brisker being at top.
Brisker, and we're talking about Pro Football Focus, they had him as a first team All American last year.
I think he's living up to that.
He's going to be a pro. As a guy with junior college transfer, both their starting safeties are junior college transfer from the same junior college,
Lackawanna,
and which has been something of a feeder for Penn State particularly under Franklin,
right.
Their secondary is really a strength.
Mm-hmm.
Stopping the run might be a little bit of an issue against the best teams in their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, running the ball, just running it inside, is a big problem. That's one thing they have not been good at all. And if you think about a couple of weeks, they're going to play a very big game at Iowa.
Oh.
If you remember the 2019 game at Iowa, that game was for modern football, that game was decided in the trenches. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that Penn State had a defensive tackle named Robert Windsor who had a phenomenal game in that game.
Yeah.
And also, they got the lead late, and they were able to kind of let Noah Cain be the closer, running the ball inside. He doesn't need a lot of space to get to grind out those 4 or 5 yard runs to move the chain, but he needs some.
Yeah,
he needs some, and right now there isn't any.
No.
And that's that might be the kind of game that they're going to have to win.
Especially at Iowa.
At Iowa, to an extent, maybe at Michigan State. Who knows? Maybe at Ohio State. Those are all on the road.
Right. So I think it's going to be a real meat grinder of a schedule just from what you're saying, just how good the conference normally is, but how it's sort of even better than that this year.
It's a little deeper, I think. Yeah. It's a little deeper, and Michigan and Michigan State so far have been pleasant surprises. And it feels like the sport has a little more parity.
Interesting.
Clemson is struggling. Ohio State is struggling.
Yeah, that's true.
Alabama was lucky to get out of Florida.
Yeah, they were.
So maybe if you look at Penn State's schedule and some of these teams hold up throughout the year, they might be able to get in with one loss.
Mm-hmm.
That's not obvious, you know.
No.
I mean, that's not clear cut, but
no.
It's not crazy, I don't think.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought, because so it will be, you know, people always talk about, you know, for all of the newfangled ways that people play offense in 2021, it always gets back to running the ball and stopping the run. It still gets back to that.
That's a big piece of it. And you know, one of the things that puts that in such focus is that it's so much of the game is in space now. It really is. But Penn State is really good, I think, at tackling in space, which is a hard thing to do. Because of all those D-backs that are, they're just good tacklers.
Yeah.
And they tackle really well in space. So that makes it even more focus on winning that tight area around the ball in the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, so it will be an interesting year. And obviously this is probably as good a start as they could have hoped to get off to, considering Wisconsin, considering Auburn. I mean, those are two really...
Two legitimate teams. I mean, I think they're both top 25. I mean, yeah. I don't know exactly where they fit in there.
No, but
I think
somewhere
both,
there.
I think they're both top 25, and there aren't many teams that have too many... Two wins better than that when we're still in September.
Yeah. So next up is Villanova. Isn't it only fair, though, if Penn State is going to play Villanova in football, that they should have to play Villanova in basketball? Shouldn't that?
That does seem fair. I didn't think of that till now, but you're right. Absolutely. Villanova, I mean, for what it's worth, but, you know, they're FCS and everything. They're 3-0, and two of them have been blowouts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, last week they had a little bit of a...
They struggled with Richmond at home, which is... Richmond's usually pretty good, but that surprised me a little bit. But their first two, they killed... I think with Bucknell and Lehigh, they just hammered the crap out of them. But obviously, this is a different animal they're going to be running into
in
Happy Valley.
Yeah, so... So we'll see what happens, and whatever happens, we will be back to talk to you about it at some point in the future. We'll see it on the road.
See you later.